You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to this AHDB podcast. My name's James Webster, a senior markets analyst with the AHDB cereals and oilseeds team. Over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be taking a look at grain marketing. We're going to be looking at what constitutes a good price, how we address seller's remorse, and some of the key mistakes that we find in marketing plans. I'm delighted to be able to welcome Ed Ussett to the podcast. He's a grain marketing economist with the University of Minnesota. So welcome, Ed.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me. My first time addressing a UK audience.
Brilliant. So Ed, if you want to start just by giving us a bit of a background to yourself and so how you became a grain marketing specialist, and then we'll delve into the gritty stuff.
Okay, well, James, back when I finished my graduate degree, master's degree at the university a long time ago, I went to work for a company called the Pillsbury Company, a major miller in the U.S. Pillsbury is now part of another food company, General Mills. But we had 8 flour mills, and I was a wheat buyer for some of those flour mills, and I was also a pit trader in the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. I did that throughout the 80s and into the early 90s. So I've got a background in the grain industry using futures, using options, if you will. And from there, I left Pillsbury after they sold the mills. By the way, it was bought by a British company, Grand Met, back in the late 80s. But Grand Met divested the milling interests. I went off on my own for a bit and ended up back in the university in the mid-late 90s, and have been here ever since as a grain market economist. Written a book on grain marketing. Grain marketing is simple. It's just not easy. I write columns for several magazines, Farm Futures and Corn and Soybean Digest, popular here in the U.S. with producers. And I run a website called Commodity Challenge, a trading website that I ask all your listeners to explore. Just Google it. Well, I teach a couple courses at the University of Minnesota, commodity marketing, and another course on futures and options markets.
Excellent. So very well placed to answer, hopefully, my next question. So we've seen quite a lot of market volatility in recent years, and I think one of the questions that most often crops up for growers is a price a good price? If I'm a farmer, I've got my crop in the bin, should I sell? How do I decide when I should sell?
Well, I think the starting point is knowing your cost of production. I preach that often. If you know what you have in the crop, all your inputs, your own labor, if you have a sense for your cost of production, you know where to start. Just because you know it doesn't mean once you get there, you sell everything. But that to me is the starting point. What's my cost of production in dollars per acre or dollars per hectare, whatever your measurement is?
Yes, it's really, I think that's something we try and talk about a lot. And we've got AHDB tools such as FarmBench, which really push understanding your pounds per hectare cost of production. And I suppose that almost gives you a bit of a break-even point.
Yes.
And then it's about starting to build a plan, really. And I guess that has to meet not only the financial goals, but also constraints in storage and constraints in when you have to sell, because sometimes you're probably going to be tied into selling at points of the season, which may be a little bit undesirable for you. And once you understand that, you can, like I say, you start to build a plan. So if a price is a good price, if it earns you money, or in some instances, in some years, probably minimizes losses. I guess what's next from your point of view in terms of developing a marketing plan?
Well, I'm always asking producers, start with your production cost, great place to start. And then I implore them, I beg them, look ahead, don't look back. You can always look back at the last year, the last 2 years, And you can name all your mistakes. You know, markets are cruel that way. I sold my wheat too early. I sold my barley too early. And I tell people, I employ producers, forget last year. Forget about it. The year ahead coming up, look ahead. The year ahead coming up is, it's going to be an interesting year. They're all interesting. And it'll be a year dictated by its own headlines that we can't anticipate right now, the size of crops that we don't know about right now. All I can assure you about the year ahead, James, is that it won't be last year. So yeah. Forget about last year. Quit trying to. I see this with U.S. producers when I travel and talk. They want to talk to me about last year. You know, last year I sold too early, and boy, I'm not going to make that mistake again. And I say, just forget about last year. Forget about it. Maybe this is the year you need to sell early. So it's a very difficult thing for producers to do because, of course, last year is so fresh in our mind. We still have the scars from the decisions we made. But look ahead. Know your costs and look ahead. And try to put the past behind you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think something that certainly some people I know talk about in terms of helping you forget about that past is writing down the reasons why you made a sale when you made the sale. Because then when you come to look back at it, because the temptation will always be there to look back as much as, you know, we want to look forwards, you can look and you can say, okay, I was happy at the point when I made the sale, or I was happy with the price or the situation in which I had to make the sale. So hopefully it allows you to keep looking forward without worrying so much about what's happened in the past. Yes.
And towards the end of my own book on grain marketing, I tell producers, you know, I make the suggestion, write down what you did, why you did it, what you saw happening. And James, I am quite convinced that it is routinely ignored by 95% of all producers, but it's too bad. It's very helpful. It's very helpful for me in personal investments and so on. Sometimes you might own a stock and you decide to, well, I'm going to sell that modest amount. You write it down. Write down why. Why today? Why did you do it today? And I have found it helpful to go back and, okay, forget about it.
I guess it's important probably to recognize that as much as it's economics, grain marketing is very much psychology as well.
Oh, good grief. I keep threatening producers I'm going to bring a psychologist or a psychiatrist from the university with a long couch. We're going to set it up front and we're going to take turns laying on that couch and talking about some of these issues. There's a lot of psychology here.
So we've talked about what makes a good price and forgetting the past. I know one of the big things you talk about in your book is the five key mistakes in grain marketing. Perhaps you give us a bit of an overview of where you see those key mistakes and how they can play into marketing plans.
Well, first I'd just like to help your listeners understand my thought process in this eliminating mistakes. Last week, I have a son who coaches football, American football, at the high school level here. And I went to his game last weekend. He's got a very young team, sort of undisciplined in some ways. They had 15 penalties in the game, and they lost the game by 1 point. Now, in American football, 1 point is a very close game. It's very common in European football, soccer, a 1 point one goal game is common, but in football, had they not made those mistakes, they would have won by 2 touchdowns. Now, this is a common theme, I think, in all sports, American football, European football, soccer, basketball, hockey, you name your sport. The good teams are fundamentally sound and they make fewer mistakes. That doesn't mean they win the title every year. It doesn't mean they go home with the gold medals. And yet they're always towards the top. They're always competitive. And so I brought that same idea to grain marketing and telling producers, quit trying to predict the market. I mean, try, but don't make that the cornerstone of your marketing plan. Think about mistakes you might be making, and we tend to make them over and over again, and see if eliminating those mistakes raises your game, just that alone. And like I say, my son's team would have won by 2 touchdowns if they had not made mistakes. They didn't have to run any faster, jump any higher, catch the ball any better.
Yep.
They'd have won big. So the 5 mistakes I talk about are the reluctance towards pre-harvest pricing. That's one. I'm talking about the fact that today, here in the U.S., our corn and soybean harvests, our small grain harvests are done. Wheat, barley, oats, things like that, they're harvested. But corn and soybean harvest is about to start. It's just getting underway, and mm-hmm. we're a few weeks away from what we call the gut slot. And I'm telling producers already, start looking ahead to next year's crop.
Yeah.
What price are you being offered for next year's crop? And I'll get this feedback. Well, next year's crop, I mean, my goodness, that's a long ways away. I can't, you know, I don't like doing that. I don't like pricing before harvest. We have crop insurance here. If you don't have a crop, there's coverage there. There's no reason not to look at early pricing opportunities. I know my cost of production. You have to sit up and pay attention. And if you've got producers today looking ahead, and I'll bet you have merchandising firms offering prices on next year's crop, and it's a profitable crop, a profitable number, maybe you know your cost of production and maybe it's modestly higher, I say, why not make a sale, a modest sale? Get started. If nothing else, I'll have your attention. You're going to watch that new crop price from here on out. And of course, if the price goes up 20 or 30% in the year ahead, James, you're going to have listeners calling in and saying, what's the email or phone number for that SOB in the U.S., that dummy you had? I want to call them and chew them out because I sold 10% of my crop at this price and now it's higher. I won't get that call, though, because they've got more to sell and they're going to be enjoying the year. But prices don't always go higher. Sometimes they go lower. So this reluctance towards pre-harvest pricing is one. I'm trying to get people over that. Another mistake, failure to understand and track your basis. Now, you've got a different futures market there, but every listener here, you're in different parts of the UK. You've got a local price and it relates to that futures price. And I ask people, do you understand what's driving that basis?
Yeah.
Is it transportation? Is it the local mills in your area? I have a hard time putting a number on how much that's worth to people, but you should understand that and have an opinion and know when your cash price is really poor relative to the futures, or maybe it's really good. It's another decision point. Third mistake I talk about is the lack of an exit strategy. I don't know how common storage is in the UK. That is, do producers often have storage on their own farm?
It's a bit of a mix. There's a fair proportion that will have on-farm storage to some degree. There's use of central storage, but generally speaking, there will be storage there, just not necessarily for everything that you're going to produce,
right,
which is always the case.
Right. Just same way here in the US, producers will have storage on the farm, not for the whole crop, but for a portion. And of course, a very common marketing strategy, harvest comes, they put it in their own storage. They fill up their own bins. And what I ask producers is, okay, you've taken your grain, you put it into storage, and now what are you waiting for? And they'll say, well, I'm waiting for a higher price. I got that. I know that. How much higher? 5% higher? 10%? 20%? And of course, we talk in cents per bushel here. And I'll tell producers, I know what your exit strategy is. You're waiting for 25 cents more, right? Yes, yes. I say, and if the market goes up 25 cents, what do? You wait for 25 cents more. You keep moving.
Goalposts keep moving.
You know, this is hurting Have an exit strategy. Have a number you're waiting for, looking for. Maybe even it's a time frame. In the US, and I'll bet it's the same in the UK, we look at the spring, April, May, June, as a period that often has better prices. Not always, there are exceptions, but yeah, often that's a good time. So I tell producers, maybe put a price on it, but by the time you get out to the spring, win, lose, or draw, you ought to be thinking about a graceful exit on last year's crop. So that's another problem, the lack of an exit strategy. The fourth problem I like to talk about relates to this lack of exit strategy, and it's a big, big problem here in the northern plains of the U.S. and in Canada, where this thing called winter allows you, kills bugs and really allows you to hold grain for a long time, and it becomes a problem. You don't have an exit strategy, and summer comes, you've got another crop growing, and last year's crop is still in storage. You haven't sold it yet. And I can show people the numbers on this, and it's just brutal. Even though, as I speak, there are years when holding grain too long is the best thing you could do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, here in the US, I would say that's about one out of every 6 years, maybe one out of 5 years. And that odd year, typically a drought year, the prices went up right through the growing season, that 1 year will implant itself in the memory. And they'll say, boy, I shouldn't have sold too early. Again, forget last year. I sold too early. And the next 4 or 5 years, they give it back because prices tend to go lower from the spring to harvest. And the final one is a little inside baseball on storage costs and carrying charges in futures markets. But a lot of people think that you can avoid storage costs by selling grain and re-owning with a call option, the right to buy futures. This is sort of, maybe advanced or pretty sophisticated marketing. But I remind people that if there is a carry in the market, that is, if the deferred prices are worth more than the nearby prices, and by the way, I tell my students at the university on the first day, the single most important concept they need to wrap their mind around to understand grain markets is carrying charges, what they are and what they represent. But if you're selling nearby, selling your crop and re-owning at a premium out ahead, you don't avoid storage costs. You pay them up front. That is what a carrying charge is. It's a storage cost. Now, if the market is inverted, the nearby price is high and the deferred prices are lower, yes, you avoid storage costs. Sell today and re-own tomorrow. But I also tell producers, you can just sell today and walk away. You don't need to use the option. So those are the five mistakes I like to talk about.
I guess there may be some situations where it is attractive to look at options. Maybe you're forced into a position where you have to make the sale for cash reasons. But yeah, it's certainly something that you don't want to get into without considering the risks and considering, well, certainly not having a full knowledge of it is a really high risk thing to do, potentially paying for something you're never going to exercise and throwing money down the drain in some respects, although, like I say, it can work. I think one of those really interesting points for me is the one about not understanding basis. And as you rightly say, everyone everywhere has a basis to a futures market.
Yes.
And that can tell you if you understand what your average basis level is, where you are, then you know on any given day how you may be pricing in physical terms, if you can see the futures market and how that's trading. But also if you're your merchant, your trader phones you up and says, I can offer you this price. And you know how that sits relative to where you'd normally be, physical pricing. Then you can look at those individual opportunities where you might have strong demand in your area.
Yes.
And your position relative to the futures market is improved compared to where it may be normally. So
yes.
That's certainly a really interesting one. And also the forward pricing aspect. From a domestic perspective in the UK, it's probably something I'm not sure of the percentages of how many people would sell forward or not, but I think this year in particular and the year before have probably taught us that there's certainly some good prices in the forward months. So when we're looking in maybe March, April, May last year, the November contract was well ahead. So November would be our post-harvest contract, well ahead of where it's been historically. And it's really important to recognize that and look at the opportunities that exist within that.
Yeah. Right now, here in the US, new crop for 2022, a year out. I understand what production costs are in the heart of the Corn Belt. And there isn't a producer in the heart of the Corn Belt who's not looking at a new crop opportunity in corn and soybeans, our two big crops in the Corn Belt. That isn't profitable. And that hasn't been true for a number of years. I mean, really from about 2014 through 2019 into 2020, you know, I wouldn't get excited about the next year. I don't want to rush ahead and price at any price. Yeah. I want to know my cost of production. But corn and soybean producers are looking at very attractive prices. Wheat producers are looking at the best opportunities they've seen in 6 or 7 years.
You've got to get that average started somewhere, and you may as well get it started at a profitable point.
Yes, yes. And you used a word there that I like, an average price, a good average price. I'm also telling producers or getting them to think about, you're not trying to sell the high, okay? You're not going to sell the high. If you live long enough and sell enough crops, you'll stumble on it once or twice in your life. But you're not going to sell the high price. Your aim is a good average price. That's your aim.
Yeah, I think if you keep chasing the highs, eventually that market will turn and you'll be looking at a point then where, again, it comes back to almost that remorse we were talking about earlier where, well, you're now looking back up. Your target price is now the high you'd seen before. And you'll forever be looking for it. Yes. And then you find yourself in that situation where you're not making sales and, you know, you could still be capitalizing on potentially profitable prices.
Sure. Sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Ed. Thank you to everybody who has listened into the podcast.
If your listeners look me up at the University of Minnesota, where I'm at the Center for Farm Financial Management there. And we have a website, and I have listed my marketing plans. I write marketing plans pre and post-harvest for corn, soybeans, and wheat every year. Now, my farms are mythical. I don't have a real farm. It's a lot easier that way. But I post them up, and you can see for yourself. I have not posted pre-harvest plans for 2022, but I'm very close to doing so.
Excellent. And then as well, from our side, there's a section on the HDB website on price risk management, and we can link that in with the podcast. So Ed, thanks again. You've been excellent. And thank you to everybody that was listening.